And there we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we are having or going to have a fantastic show today. Got Crystal and Tammy on. Nisha is in Dallas doing her bit with Dallas HR, I believe, today. And we're just going to have a fantastic show. So without any further ado or vacation talk or Cleveland talk, we'll get right into it. Tammy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, William. Thanks for having me on.
I've got kind of a raspy voice. I'm not sure what I'm going for there. It's just kind of what's coming out. I'm not overtly trying to be that person, but it is what it is. And do us a favor, if you don't mind. Introduce yourself to the audience. Give the audience a sense of your pertinence.
Sure. I am the managing partner of a company called Talent Crib. We do retained recruiting and veterans hiring initiatives here in Cleveland, Ohio, and I've been in the recruiting and HR world for way too many years, started back when I was a teenager, and have worked both as an HR leader and a recruiting leader, as well as doing the day-to-day find the great people for the great companies kind of work. So most recently moved into the veteran space.
Oh, that's cool. It's funny in life, when you're younger, you use the years as kind of a badge. You know, it's been in the industry 7 years or 10 years, and then at one point it becomes an albatross. I don't know if you've noticed this, but at one point you just, yeah, I've been in the industry for 35 years. Anywho, let's not worry too much about how long or who said what. It's just kind of funny how that. I think that's true of all industries, not just our funny industry. What's keeping you up at night? What's top of mind for you these days?
You know, I think, and this is a conversation that I've been having for the last couple of weeks, has been how internal and external recruiters work together. This is something that I've been working through with various clients, and, you know, I'm on both sides of the fence because I'm sort of playing a role as an internal recruiter. But at the same time, you know, my business is as an external party. I think a lot of the conversations that I've been having recently have revolved around how do you get this partnership to work for the internal recruiter who, you know, the standing routine is, I don't want to use a third party, you know, I can do this. And at the same time, you know, a company that's saying, well, we're not getting the people we need, so we're going to pull in a bunch of third party people to bring us resumes or whatever it is. And how do you build that partnership so that you have an effective recruiting process? I think it's tough for a lot of people on both sides to figure out how to make it work, because there is a inherent conflict. You know, if the internal recruiter looks at it and says, well, I have to use a third party to find the people that I need, does that mean I'm not doing my job? And the third party assumes, well, you know, the internal people are useless, so we'll just go straight to the hiring manager and find them people. So I think it's a struggle, and there's, you know, I think the work to be done there. And so I've been having that conversation quite a bit.
Well, so let's go down that road, because that's really interesting, right? That's an age-old struggle. I don't know if you know this, but I started an agency recruitment when I moved into recruiting and HR. And they were having that conversation back in 2004. Turns out they're still having it. So what do you say? How do you strike that balance?
You know, I think the biggest piece is communication. Particularly here in Cleveland, I have built some really great partnerships with third-party recruiters that I know I can call and say, I need XYZ. They know how I work. They know it, you know, that I'm going to give them every bit of information and every bit of access that I possibly can. And we've built a true partnership where I think a lot of times it starts out as a conflict. I mean, you've got a conflict to start with, so how do you have to get past the conflict? And I've always approached it as, this is how I work. This is what my process is. Here's all the information I'm going to give you. Tell me if you need more. And we'll work together, because if they're successful in bringing me a candidate, then I'm successful. And I think I didn't always used to be that way. But I think changing my mindset helped me to build those partnerships. And I think a lot of it is finding the third-party recruiters that are willing to do that. that are truly willing to build a partnership. And I you know, I think there's a lot of them out there. But, you know, just like internal recruiters get a bad rap, third-party people get a bad rap, and, you know, on both sides you have to weed out the crazy.
Well, that's sometimes easier said than done, right? But, so can we pivot just a little bit? Because you brought up something that's interesting, which is how internal recruiters are judged if they're using external agency, which is a little bit crazy when you think about it, right? Because if it's any size of a company, like any decent size, mid, large enterprise company, they're getting way more applicants than they could ever possibly process. Some validity and I think real value to using a third-party agency, if for no other reason than to help them weed through what they can't get through on their own. And how do you not miss something if you have a million applicants?
Well, and I think a lot of times, too, you know, prime example, I worked with a company here in town that is a manufacturing company, and they're more of an engineering company that happens to make stuff. But they had some very specific requirements in SAP. We were doing an SAP implementation. We needed 5 people that knew SAP like the back of their hands. Well, SAP is a pretty small community here in Cleveland. You know, they're not folks that are going to relocate. They don't relocate. So I had to find people in Cleveland. Well, unless I spent time building a desk around SAP, I didn't know anybody that was working in the space. It made perfect sense to go to a third party who specialized in SAP in Cleveland and said, I need these 5 people. Because otherwise, this company was going to pay me for 3 months to develop the network to find the people, which from a timeliness of hire perspective makes absolutely no sense. It ended up being cheaper to hire the agency.
Yeah,
but on the same time.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I'll say at the same time I had, you know, developers. Well, I could pull, you know, 1,000 developers up tomorrow and weed through them for the specifics. That's not a job I need an agency for. You know, I've got the people that I need. And I think it's not just applicants. It's, you know, how in depth of knowledge, what's your depth of knowledge in a particular industry?
It's quality, right? So I mean,
it is. It's totally quality.
When you boil it down, you know, when you pay a third-party recruiter, you're paying for access to a well-cultivated network and insights that you're not going to be able to get in a timely manner on your own, and potentially people that you couldn't reach on your own. Totally.
Exactly.
Totally speaking what you're speaking your language and feeling what you're putting out. But I think we as an industry have gone backwards with this. We approach it backwards, maybe. Like, it seems to me like corporations look at recruiters and say, you were supposed to replace the third-party recruiter, rather than you're supposed to manage the recruitment process, however that goes. What fundamentally makes using an agency any different than dropping down a couple $100,000 on LinkedIn or a month or
so? Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I do think good internal recruiters can reduce agency spend. There has to be reasonable expectations as to where the expertise is. You know, I can find engineers, but can I find a chemical PhD that's been in a, you know, one of the top 10 companies in the U.S. doing, you know, whatever chemical PhDs do? I don't even know. Probably not, at least not in a timely manner.
Right.
So you have the ability as a good third party, or as a good internal, to reduce the spend if you figure out how to use it wisely. You don't need a staffing company to find you a secretary, but you can use a staffing company or a third-party agency to find you something in a specialized area on the other side of the country where you wouldn't even know where to find these folks, much less be able to tap into, you know, a network quickly.
There's no reason to think that they would take your call. I mean, that's the other piece of it too,
exactly.
Right? If you want to harp on the whole passive talent thing, which is kind of crap, but that's a different conversation probably. But if you want to,
I don't know, because I do think there's some validity there, Crystal. I really do. I mean, if I'm working,
if
I'm representing
they take your call. So the moment that I take your call, if you call me about a job, I may have been passive up until the moment you called, but the second you call me and you talk to me about a job opportunity, I'm not really passive anymore. Not if I'm listening to you, not if I'm considering it.
I would agree with that. And I was thinking of it a little bit differently in that, if I'm working for a, you know, a Fortune 100 company and I want to recruit out of a competitor company, it's I have found that it's actually easier to get a third-party agency to do that work so that mm-hmm. your company doesn't get a reputation of, oh, you know, so-and-so company is always diving in stealing our people. There's a little, you know, it's the plausible deniability a little bit.
Yes, I will say I've paid one agency fee on my corporate life, and it was absolutely to put a little bit about a little bit of a buffer in between me and the person that we were hiring because it was out of the company that my brother worked for.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I've used it. But we, you know, we tend to use that as a badge of honor. Oh, I never pay agency spends, or I've only placed one person. And I've done it too, so, you know, not to be a hypocrite.
No, and I had two for years. It was, you know, I would never pay an agency. And I think...
You know what was... So tell me if this is off. So I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I want to get your opinion on this. I heard from them, and granted, to be fair, it was a managing director of a recruiting firm, but, you know, he was like, that's not really a badge of honor. What that tells me is you don't have good time management skills. So I was like, whoa, wait a minute. That seems almost mean, you know? But he said, you know, follow through. The amount of time that you have to spend to develop a viable network in any particular specialized area is time that's probably better served in other areas inside of your firm, like getting to know your hiring managers and, you know, really understanding your value proposition and probably changing the way that you're doing, you know, other technology spends. And so the more you talk about it, the more sense it made, right? But we don't really incentivize recruiters on a lot of that. So do you think maybe, again, corporations are perpetuating the problem by the way that they measure success for internal recruiters?
I think they are. You know, and it's kind of like if you set up a recruiter to say, you must hire 10 people at X level in order to get a bonus. Okay, but the recruiter isn't making the hiring decision. Present 10 people makes a little bit more sense than you must hire because, again, they don't. The recruiter doesn't have control over, yes, I picked the right person. You know, the hiring manager is making that decision. You want, if you want to hold the hiring manager to that standard, I think it's a good idea. But I think as an industry, we have not figured out what the real metrics are that we should be measured by. And I think there's, you know, yes, 10 people are going to get 10 different opinions. There hasn't really been a consensus. But, you know, we all, every one of us, every company falls back on time to fill. And I think there are so many variables in time to fill that, and it can be so manipulated that it doesn't make a whole, you know, ton of sense to hold anybody to that. You can't hold anybody to that standard. You really can't. Too many variables in the process. Hiring manager goes on vacation for 2 weeks. He's not doing interviews. He's got to make the decision. You know, how do you? You can't always account for every, you know, every variable in that process. So to hold a recruiter to a idea of if you ever use agency spend, you're going to be a successful recruiter, I think I agree with your director of recruiting that, you know, maybe you don't have the best time management skills. And that's why you should develop those partnerships, particularly in areas that you don't have expertise.
So, Tammy, this is William. Not that you couldn't discern my voice from Crystal's, but, you know, hey, let's just throw it out there. So your three pet peeves right now in our industry, when you see a blog article or a webinar or someone rolls something past you and your eyes roll back in the back of your head, what are the three things you'd like to kill off in our industry?
I think I'd like to kill off this idea of thought leadership. There are experts in our field. There are amazingly brilliant people in our field. But I think that we have, you know, in the echo chamber, I guess you could say, taken to, well, this person's a thought leader and that person's a thought leader. And you look at it and go, okay, but what have they said? What have they done? I think it's lost its, that word, that phrase has lost its meaning. So I'd like to see it go away. I don't know. I don't think we should go back to guru, but you know what I mean. I think we need to change the way we look at the experts in a field. And I don't even think that's HR specific. I think that's pretty global. We are continuing to try to figure out how we are important. You know, there was a recent article about how we influence as business partners. And, you know, is the thing about business partners really working for us? And I don't know, you know, we had the discussion at HR Evolution about disruption and, you know, how we shouldn't even use that word. And I'm really frustrated with this concept that we are constantly trying to reinvent ourselves. And I don't know that we've ever gotten to the root of the problem. And I don't know that reinventing ourselves multiple times fixes any of it. I think the business needs have changed. I don't think the process has changed. I think there's a lot of people in the industry that are continually trying to reinvent the wheel. And
so why do you think that is? And why is it inherently bad?
Because hiring is pretty simple when you get down to it. I mean, at the basic level. Why is that?
No, so you're right. Hiring is simple, but people are complex.
People are complex. But we're the same people, you know, as a society. We're the same people we were 20 years ago. Hiring is a simple process. And I think in a lot of ways we've tried to use technology to change what we do, when we should be using technology to improve what we do instead of changing it. You know, we now have the ATS black hole and that's something else I wish we could stop talking about. It's not an ATS black hole. If you use the technology properly, there's no black hole. So is it untrained recruiters? Is it non-responsive hiring managers? Is it the way we present our business? I think the black hole is human. I don't think it's an ATS. We need to stop blaming the technology.
Truth. Candidate
experience,
not a technology
if I have, it is. It's a human thing. If I put out an ad and I get 200 responses, I need to be efficient in going through those resumes and dispositioning the people, the resumes, so that they know what's going on. There's 5 ways to automate that process so that they can constantly know what's going on. It's not a black hole if you do it right. So that
right.
goes back to bad recruiting, not bad technology. You know, we didn't set it up right. We didn't set up the letters so that people know how to check status. You know, if you're not using the process right, you're going to have unsatisfied candidates.
Dude, it's a scapegoat. Like, it used to be the hiring managers never got back to us. It's not our fault we haven't talked to you in a month. We haven't heard back from the hiring managers. Never mind that you could walk down the hall and ask the hiring manager what was going on, right?
Exactly.
Now it's just the ATS lost you. I'm so sorry.
You know, and the funny thing is in my umpteen years of recruiting, my technology has never failed. I have failed, but my technology has never failed. Those people were sitting in that
wreck. Okay, well, you're luckier than I am. I've totally had technology fails, but it didn't mean that. I mean, even when I was managing 44 wrecks, I could tell you who was involved in each wreck. Like, you take notes. Think backups.
Yeah.
This is why we have backups, people. But all of that being said, you do have to look at scale, right? So when you're managing 4 wrecks, less of an excuse. When you're managing 400 wrecks, and that's as many doing that. But the larger the wreck volume, the easier it is for stuff to fail, which really just means you've got to be more on your game. But the reality is recruiters don't want to talk to candidates. So there's the real problem.
It is.
We don't want to talk to you. How do you solve for that?
I talk to people. So how do you solve for it? You teach recruiters to talk to people. You know, now, I do rely on technology at the very beginning of the process. You know, it's an email conversation. I find most of my candidates prefer that, to have an email conversation and kind of let them judge before we set up a conversation. You know, they're just as busy as I am. A unscheduled call in the middle of a work day at my office is going to be disruptive, and they're probably not going to take it too well. So I give them time, you know, to research the company and to come up with some questions and all of those things. So I do use technology in the beginning, but I have conversations. And my candidates, after we've gone through, you know, whatever step of the process, I have a conversation with them. And I'll be honest, where I have failed in the past is ignoring that conversation because it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
That's the piece that I continually work on is I have to be willing, push myself to have those complicated conversations. Because you'd never want to be asked, well, why? Why didn't I get the job?
Well, and
you have to be willing to get the information.
Well, you know, I got to say, HR is a little to blame here. Because HR has said, no, you can't say why they've not been chosen. You can't say why they were rejected because that opens us up to legal liability.
Yeah, and usually it's because they're being rejected for a silly reason.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, like, at what point can, even if you can't, so I've always struggled with that because it seems like crap to me. Like, it totally seems like a really ridiculous way to handle people. So maybe you can't say this is a specific reason that you didn't get it, but you can certainly give them something that they could have improved on because it's usually not just one thing, right? It's a couple of things, unless they're just awful people. So, I mean, why not give them, why don't we do more like what PeopleClues would give in their assessment results, things that they could do to help them in their job search? This should be like a standard of candidate experience and recruitment, but it's not.
I agree with you. It should be. And it's easy to do. It really is. I go to a hiring manager. They've interviewed 4 people. They say, I'm going to pick this one and not these 3. I ask them why. What put this one ahead of the other 3? And out of that conversation, I know what to tell the candidates when I pick up the phone and say, hey, really sorry, we're not able to make you an offer. And it's not you didn't get the job. It's not we like somebody better. It's we're not able to make you an offer. And this is why. And whatever that is, whatever came out of that conversation. Now, you know, no, sometimes you can't tell a candidate the blind truth. But it's easy to give feedback based if you've got a good hiring process. It's easy to give feedback.
Yeah, it's owed if it's not something that would severely damage them, you know, then it's owed. Let me get your take on the discussion that happens a lot in our industry around skills fit or skills versus culture. And, you know, the perfect candidate is both. And we all know that. This is everything that we've been taught is you'd love for someone to be competent at the skills that are required both now and in the future and culturally be able to just weave right in, bob right in, and have a coffee and a beer and just fit right in. The truth is that never happens. You never get both. That's the purple unicorn with 3 legs. So where do you lie on this? Where do you kind of come down on, I care more about this than I do this?
I typically look for 80% of the skills. And a culture fit. Culture fit is going to be what drives somebody out of a company faster than their inability to do a job or their lacking of a certain skill. Because people, generically, just generally speaking, have the ability to grow and develop. Every company wants people that can grow and develop. So if we can find someone who's got 80% of what we need, the other 20% is typically trainable. But if they don't fit into the culture of the company, if they have a, you know, immediate conflict, personality conflict with management, they're not going to last. They will not be successful in that company.
Okay.
It's very few people that get fired for, you can't do this job.
Well, and I think there's very few people that have a true personality conflict in the interview process, right? So, like, don't we need to go a little bit further than just conflict? And I think in recruiting, one of our fails is we don't spend enough time really measuring not just you know, do you clash, but how well will you be able to fit and grow within our organization? I don't know that we have a good assessment for that yet. Do you?
Yeah, I worked with a company that did a very in-depth personality analysis, and they had been in business 50 years. So they had probably, let's go with 30 years of data on who was successful in this company. And the end result after working with this company, what I realized is that success was a very particular personality type from leadership. Unfortunately, only a very small percentage, well, they were hiring based on that assessment, were compatible with the culture of the company. And it was too many people that think the same way. Flat out, too many people that were thinking the same way. And so they get in and they'd be 2 years down the road and, oh, I can't be this type A, always driving, always leading person when I've got 2 years of experience because there's, you know, 500 people in front of me.
Well, okay, yeah.
Who are the exact same way.
Right. We don't need a homogenous work environment, truth. So one of the things, okay, like this is kind of a not my smoothest segue ever, but we're going to use it. So speaking of homogenous, that's not a word I would use to ever describe you. So where could people go to learn about you and all of your glorious colors?
You know, I think the best place to learn about me is LinkedIn right now. Our website is in the process of being put together, so there's not a lot out there, but I do publish on LinkedIn, and that's where my brand is currently sitting. So Talent Crib focuses on helping companies to develop recruiting strategies and how to put together strong hiring initiatives for veterans. And I love to teach hiring managers how to really dig into how to improve their hiring process.
Awesome. What's next for you? Where are you going to be next conference-wise?
That's a good question. Just coming off vacation and a absolutely insane couple of months. I'm probably going to be looking at Disrupt HR on Thursday here in Cleveland, and then NORC, and that's March or April.
Right on, and then you'll be at SHRM, I guess, in June, right?
Hopefully. We'll see what happens with that, but that's the game plan.
Well, we'll keep fingers crossed. Thank you so much for joining us today on Drive Through HR. Tammy.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right, well, we're going to call it a day. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.